2 Samuel 15, let's stand together. We'll begin reading in verse 13. There came a messenger to David saying, "The hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom." David said to all his servants that were with him at Jerusalem, "Arise, let us flee. We shall not else escape from Absalom. Make speed to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring evil upon us. Smite the city with the edge of the sword." And the king's servant said to the king, "Behold, thy servants are ready to do whatsoever my lord the king shall appoint." The king went forth, and all his household after him. And the king left 10 women, which were concubines, to keep the house. And the king went forth, and all the people after him, and tarried in a place that was afar off. And all his servants passed on beside him. And all the Cherethites, and all the Pelethites, and all the Gittites, 600 men, which came after him from Gath, passed on before the king. Then said the king to Ittai the Gittite, "Wherefore goest thou also with us? Return to thy place and abide with the king, for thou art a stranger and also an exile. Whereas thou camest but yesterday, should I this day make thee go up and down with us, seeing I go whither I may? Return thou and take back thy brethren. Mercy and truth be with thee." And Ittai answered the king and said, "As the Lord liveth, and as my lord the king liveth, surely in what place my lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even there also will thy servant be." David said to Ittai, "Go and pass over." And Ittai the Gittite passed over, and all his men and all the little ones that were with him, and all the country wept with a loud voice, and all the people passed over. The king also himself passed over the brook Kidron, and all the people passed over toward the way of the wilderness. I want to speak for a few moments tonight on dealing with the crises of life. David is in a terrible situation. As you know, David committed sin, and he paid a long time, heavy consequences all of his life for the sin that he had committed. David's watching his family fall apart. One child at a time went back with Amnon and the rape of his daughter and then the death of Amnon and now Absalom, all these years of rebellion. And he watched Absalom begin to slowly take the hearts of Israel. And people, you'll understand something. Someone that truly understands authority, knows principles of authority, has no problem giving up their authority. David knew he was called by God, anointed by God, chosen by God to be the king. But when Absalom rose up, it wasn't because it was his son. Because David reached a point in his life where he fully trusted in God. He said, "God, whatever you want to do here is fine." But I want you to see the predicament, the crisis that David finds himself in. And you know, in life, when we deal with crises, it's not health, it's not an accident, it's not a financial crisis that really is the most extreme, but normally it's the family crisis. Whether that's a child or a marriage, mother or father. And he finds himself in a family crisis. Now, think about this, because where we start in our text, verse 13, there came a messenger to David saying, "The hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom." And he had watched this take place day by day. He'd seen Absalom. I don't know if he'd addressed it or not. But the point was, I know some would say, well, how did he lose their hearts? But it really wasn't up to David to win the heart of Israel. It was up to David to rule over Israel and win the heart of God. And as a nation, one by one, we see Absalom gaining their hearts and then standing up in rebellion. And suddenly David finds his world upside down. He doesn't want to fight his son. He doesn't want to fight against his son. He doesn't want to start a war. He doesn't want his people hurt. And here's maturity in a place of leadership. Really, it comes to a point where you're just concerned about the safety of those under you and around you. Sometimes others won't understand the decisions you make. But you're looking at the bigger picture, and you're looking at the lives that are touched and the ramifications and the people that might be hurt and the potential for danger. And that's what David was doing. And he was willing to sacrifice himself and his position, his name, his reputation. He was willing to sacrifice it all and walk away. And I know in life there are times when, you know, we think we're going to live a life exempt from dealing with this kind of severe family problems, but most of us won't. There comes a point in life when it's our turn. You know, when you stand off in a distance, before you have kids or if everyone in your family is serving God, it's easy to stand off in a distance and watch and observe, criticize, suggest, and give an opinion. But until you're there, and knowing that at some point those around you are making adult decisions, you can control a five-year-old. Well, you're supposed to be able to control a five-year-old. You can basically control a 14 or 17-year-old. But once that young person grows up and grows into adulthood, there comes a point where they have to make decisions on their own, and they must decide for themselves if they're going to do right. And then things get really complicated. And here's what sin does. It just complicates everything. What we have in our imagination is the best case and the best scenario. But when sin gets involved, there is no best case. It's what's better. And David didn't have a perfect situation here, and he didn't have a magic wand. He did have a prayer life. He did have a mighty God. But in this, in all of this, we must understand, although the problem was deeply intertwined in all of his family and all of their relationships, Bible principle never changes because family is involved. That's where we have to be careful. Because too often those things that we, those principles that we stood so firmly on, and those beliefs that we so long held, and in that which we knew to be truth, suddenly has been affected by an emotion because a family, a personal family member is involved. And those lines that used to be so clear now are blurred because it's family. Be careful. When you have a child involved, or you have a parent involved, you have a brother involved, that which you knew to be truth suddenly is debatable because it's flesh and blood, and emotions begin to cloud our thinking and distort Bible truth. And in all of this, the lines still had to be drawn. Absalom is living in rebellion. And although he told his general, don't slay the young man, no one wants to see flesh and blood hurt on any level. But this is the path that rebellion takes. And here's the problem. When you stand for truth and you do right and you love that person, isn't it strange how you always end up being the bad guy no matter what decision you make or what direction you take? If I could only find a way to solve this problem, if I could only find a way, and you reach out and you try to help. But the bottom line is this. When truth is proclaimed, principle is declared, and someone's doing wrong, you're the bad guy. Get used to it. Doesn't matter how much help you've given, how much grace you've shown, how much money you've loaned, how many times you've gone out of your way, how you've broken your neck to help that person pay their consequence, you're still going to look like the bad guy. You know what David couldn't do? He couldn't call a national gathering and grab a microphone and say, folks, come on, pay attention here. Listen to the truth. Because normally the truth is more destructive than helpful. Proclaiming the truth is more hurtful than problem solving. And I'm sure one of his wives said, David, just please, please make a plea to the nation. Get on the radio. David, come on. You can regather the nation and regather the people on your behalf if you just tell them the truth about Absalom and the truth about yourself. And David said, I won't do that. I'll let God take sides and determine what happens and let the future reveal and time show what we know. But meanwhile, we have to leave the palace. Now, we're either naive or living in a bubble to think that we can actually live our life without having to deal with severe family crisis on some level, and most have already done that. Because regrettably, as your family grows or you already have brothers, maybe you were saved out of a family that had never known the gospel, so the disaster was already pre-existing, or maybe your children grew, and now watched as they've taken a wrong direction. Maybe you're dealing with a brother-in-law. It doesn't matter who you're dealing with. Believe it or not, in this church, there are very few exceptions. Most of us already have to deal with this on some level. You know the pain that's involved, and here's David facing the most severe crisis of his life. And you know what? At this stage, he cared nothing about the throne or the palace. His heart and mind was on one object, his son. His family was already a mess. He had already had to go to funerals. His heart had been broken repeatedly. But here he's thinking, Lord, if somehow, some way, you could get the attention of my son Absalom. Be careful. Because sometimes when we're dealing with this, we think that if we could just get that preacher or that person or that Christian or a letter over here, it would change the life, get the attention. But if they're not listening to the Holy Spirit, they're not going to listen to a human being. And Absalom now has his face set like a flint. He's going to take over the palace. And David knows if Absalom gets the chance, he will take his own father's life. Do you see what's taking place? Now, David does a smart thing. David immediately says, let's go. Verse 17, the king went forth and all the people after him, and he tarried in a place that was afar off. Now, here's what David did. David said, we're going to take a step back, regroup before we make a serious decision and determine our direction. And he, in doing this, made sure that what took place was an action, not a reaction. Be careful, because when you're in the midst of a crisis, your mind's not thinking clearly. And especially when it's a family crisis, you're thinking very emotionally, not biblically normally. The best thing to do is always take a step back, get in God's word and pray a little bit, get some counsel. Now, here's what he did in doing this. He saved a city from a war, from destruction. Now, be careful, because here's what happens, especially if you're a parent, be careful. Because parents often will sacrifice everyone in the general vicinity to save their child. And I've watched a lot of innocent people hurt because mom was so intent on saving or protecting. She'll lose the rest of her children to save that one. Well, I know where he's at, and I know what he's doing. I know what she's at, and I know. But we got to bring her in. And then you watch the destruction that follows and the chaos. All with the purpose of saving that. You better be careful. Take a step back. Take a breather. Take a good look at the situation and say, let's make sure that when we move forward, it's with God's blessing. It's based on Bible principle. It's not a knee-jerk reaction. And in doing so, he was making sure as a king, he was fulfilling his duty to also protect and preserve the lives there in Jerusalem. In doing so, he was providing for his entire family instead of thinking about the preservation of one. Parents, be careful. How often I've watched parents neglect their other children in an effort to save one. Remember, your whole duty is your entire family. Sometimes it's good to take a step back, just get a look at the bigger picture. But look at verse 19. Then said the king to Ittai the Gittite, "Wherefore goest thou also with us? Return." Now, here's what I like. If you go back to verse 18, you see all these men. Men of battle. Cherethites, Peliathites, and Gittites. 600 men. Now, here's who Ittai was. I don't know if you remember way back in David's earlier days when he was running from Saul. He picked up Ittai along the way. And these were really mercenaries from other countries that had come and helped David fight. When David was in distress, these men had stepped up and they'd formed quite the bond. And David had made an agreement with them, and they were basically his guard, and he took care of their needs, and there was extreme loyalty there. So when David took off, those 600 soldiers come with him, cross the creek. Look what it says, verse 19. Then said the king to Ittai the Gittite, "Wherefore goest thou also with us? Return to thy place. Abide with the king, for thou art a stranger and also an exile, whereas thou camest but yesterday." He said, "Listen, you're a new kid on the block, and you just came. You don't owe me your life. You don't owe me." Now be careful, because when we get in these kind of tragedies, the last thing that we do is really trust God. We enter into panic mode. And that support group that we desire, we got to make phone calls and make sure they're right here. And I want to feel surrounded and strengthened. And you know the best thing to do in a crisis? Let God form your support group. Here's what you're going to see David doing in this trial. Instead of trying to gather people around to help himself out, he's more concerned about their safety. He said, "Listen, you have 600 men, and you stood with me, and you fought with me, and you've risked your life, but this is not your battle. This isn't something that you have to fight. You're free to go. I don't be careful, because when you're in a battle, you know what you want to do? You feel all alone. You feel attacked. You feel a personal attack. And the first thing you do, I want to get people on my side. I got to tell my story so I can get people on my side." And David's setting a very good example. There's no story to be told. He said, "Go back. Go home. Go to the palace. Don't risk your life for me. I'm fine. I'm in God's hands." And here's what I see. You know, I never truly, Brother Jay, understood a passage like this years ago, early in my ministry, because I hadn't been through the battles. I hadn't faced betrayal. I hadn't suffered severe family crisis. I had known what it was to be lied about, to be injured, to be hurt, to be betrayed. But as you live your life and as you face battles, the more you understand and respect David in these circumstances, because the natural tendency is to seek a support group and make sure people know enough details to get on the right side. You know, the line is drawn, the city is split in half. So I just want to make sure that people are properly informed so they can follow the right guy. David wasn't doing that. Well, David, if you just get a letter out to key people, you know what would happen? You'd get people lined up on your side. He said, "I'm not going to write a letter. I'm not worried about key people. I just need God on my side, and this will turn out all right. People are going to believe whatever they want to believe. The uninformed are going to stand informed. The informed are going to have to make a decision. But that's not key right now. Here's maturity." His maturity said, "I'm more concerned about the welfare of those around me than I am a support group or forming a support group." It would be helpful to have 600 fighting men that know you and have fought with you on your side. I don't think at this point I'd be sending those home. But David was not thinking about himself or his own safety. He was thinking about them and their welfare. And he said, "Seeing I go whither I may, return thou, take back thy brethren. Mercy and truth be with thee." And what did he say? Can't do it, Dave. We've been through too many battles. Hey, I've already given everything up. We've already fought, and I thought I would have lost my life years ago, but I'm with you. I'm staying with you. Now, you're a fortunate man. If you get a few loyal people around you in your lifetime, you're a fortunate person. But to have 600 that say, David, that blows my mind. 600 men that say, David, we're willing to lay down our lives for you. If you find one or two people like that in your lifetime, you've had a good life. David has 600 men here saying, David, we're not going anywhere. But that's not the point. The point is this. In the midst of a crisis, be careful, because the fleshly thing to do is got to have a support team. Now, if your relationship with God is not good, you're going to need a pretty hefty support team. But if you have God and a good relationship with God, you know what you're saying at this point? You guys go ahead and do whatever you need to do. I'm leaving the palace, and God has to take care of this situation. Now, look what it says in verse 24. Lo Zadok also, all the Levites were with him, bearing the ark of the covenant of God. They sat down, the ark of God. Abiathar went up unto all the people, done passing out the city. You know, when you're in the midst of the crisis, don't forget the importance of worship. You know how often, and I can't understand it, I've watched people in the midst of a crisis begin to distance themselves from church. They miss a Wednesday night, then they miss a Sunday night, then they miss a Sunday, and then they show up late, and then they miss the song service, and they miss half of this, and they're distancing themselves from God and the very thing that they need the most. And here's David in the midst of this trial, and he's walking out of this city, and he brings the Ark of the Covenant, and he brings the priests, and they set up. Listen, when you're fleeing for your life, normally you don't stop to have a service, especially not one that demands animal sacrifice. That's a little tedious. How many of you notice when people go into crisis, the place they should be the most and the place they need the most, the house of God, is the very place that they begin to avoid? Or if they come to the place, they don't come in the spirit, so worship is not taken. Did you know you can be here and not worship? How many have ever found yourself in the situation where you came, you parked your body in the seat where it should be found, but worship was not taking place? Your mind was preoccupied. You're in the battle. You're frustrated with things that are happening in your life. You're concerned about what God is doing or not doing. And Lord, you know, kind of busy right now for this. I mean, when you come to this place and are concerned about your phone and a call, a business appointment, and an obligation, and David is literally fleeing for his life, knowing this could be the end, the last week that he is on this planet. He has a son that is seeking his destruction. David said, bring the ark, bring the priests, and let's worship. David is setting the bar high. Yes, I know he fell. Yes, I know that he made mistakes in his life, but David has grown enough at this point. You're going to see the next few chapters in the life of David are astounding, his Christian character and the wise decisions that are made while he takes place in this conflict, this chaos, this crisis, still maintains his integrity. Look what it says, verse 25. Look at his faith. The king said to Zadok, when they had finished the worship, carry back the ark of God into the city. Now, you have to remember this. How did Israel deal with the ark of God? They knew this was the presence of God. So for them to have the ark of God present was extremely important. And David said, you can carry the ark of God back into the city. If I shall find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me again and show me both it and his habitation. But if he thus say, I have no delight in thee, behold, here am I. Let him do to me as seemeth good unto him. David reached a point in his Christian life where he said, you know what, God's got to be in this. And I'm going to leave, but God determines who sits on that throne and who lives through this. And you can see, and I'm not going to take you through these chapters, but here's what you can see. He's totally trusting in God with his support group. He's totally trusting in God with his circumstance. I don't need the palace to be happy. I don't need servants to be happy. I don't need the nice bed and the comfortable surroundings and everything in order to be happy. God is changing my circumstance, and I can trust him with that. Amen. And I can trust God with vengeance. Can you trust God with these things? Can you trust God with your circumstance? Can you trust God with your support group or your lack of support? I've stood a few times in my life on a lonely island where I've talked to my own friends and heard the doubt in their voices. You know, that's a lonely place to be when those that you call for support speak with doubt concerning your judgment, character, or decisions. It's a lonely place to find yourself. Can you trust God there? Can you trust God right there in the midst of your circumstance? Now listen, the days before when you're in the palace popping grapes in your mouth and filling the fans held by the servants and sleeping in that fine, comfortable bed and living the good life, oh, that's easy to trust God. I'm not talking about those moments. I'm talking about when the servant comes and says, your son has an army. He's turned the hearts of the men of the city, and this city is going to rise up with him and kill you. Can you trust God then? Can you trust God when your world gets turned upside down? Can you trust God when it's in? Listen, he could have gathered his army and said, well, I'm going to settle this matter right now and just let the nation know who's in charge. You know what's funny? I've watched this happen in life. I've watched it happen in my own life. The more God's in charge, the less I'm concerned about being in charge. Aren't you concerned about your position? No, not really. That belongs to God. Aren't you concerned about who might question your authority? No, not really. I don't know if I'd follow my own authority. Oh, those who are so intent on establishing their authority have no authority at all. And David is the one that's walking out of this palace saying, I can trust God. You know what's amazing? In David, if you observe this, now I don't want to go down this rabbit trail because we could be here all night and I promise to be short. But when you can trust God with your suffering, you've reached a level of spiritual maturity that's going to help everyone around you. Let me ask you tonight, can you trust God with your suffering right now? I don't know what you're suffering, but can you trust God with that? Whatever you're dealing with, wherever you're hurting, however you're frustrated, whether that's financially or physically, whether that's emotionally, circumstances the most don't even know about, circumstances you can't explain to anyone. Can you trust God in that suffering and say, okay, God, I can't control this, I can't fix this, I can't change this, but I can trust you with it because you're the only one that can do something about it. Now, you think other people had their lives turned upside down. What about David? And the worst part was this was his son, and the nation knew it. And then he took those concubines that David had left and put up tents. And the wickedness and the depravity of this man was appalling, but he was throwing it in the face of David, his father, in the face of Israel. I promise you, it just wasn't the people of Israel that were questioning David. It wasn't just his servants. It was his own children, wives. David, what are we doing? This is a good decision? Oh, so you lead the nation by fleeing. What an example you set. You're afraid of your own son. You could have squelched this whole revolution long ago. You're the one that let him sit in the gate and turn the hearts. He was being barraged from every side, good people and bad people. And then comes the word. Yeah, right there in your text. What's the next word he receives? Ahithophel, your trusted advisor. The man that when he speaks, it's as if we're listening to the very oracles of God. He has turned against you. Verse 31, one told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, Oh Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. Can you imagine at this very bleak moment? If I were in a situation where everyone in the church had turned against me, my own wife and children are beginning to doubt me. And then I hear, you know who's giving counsel to the church? Brother Logan and Brother Fuller. Yeah, Ahithophel has taken Absalom's side. I think too often we read Scripture and don't realize what's actually taking place. David is in a lonely, lonely place. He's put all his trust in God. And we've seen David begin to mature, spiritually mature. In a heart of faith, he says, God, you're going to have to solve this problem. I'm not going to try to fix it. Ladies, can I get your attention for just a minute? That man is supposed to be your spiritual leader, and you're going to have to trust that man to be your spiritual leader. And although you can't understand the decisions he's making, it'd be a good thing. Take a step back and say, God leads this home through him. I'm going to follow him and trust him on this one. God leads through leaders. Not perfect leaders. Yeah, Bathsheba is following a man that led her into adultery. Abigail is following a man whose sons are disasters. Now, here's what he did. In the midst of all this chaos, verse 30, David went up by the ascent of the Mount Olivet, wept as he went up, had his head covered. He went barefoot, and all the people that were with him covered every man his head, and they went up weeping as they went up. Did you know there's no problem with showing a little bit of emotion as long as you're not letting that emotion control you? I know some people, emotional, never show any emotion, but they're emotional to the point they're making wrong decisions. David's weeping. This is the time to weep. David's looking at a point in his life where everything basically is a total loss. It's not the wealth. It's not the palace. It's not the servants. It's not the chariots. It's not the gold. It's not the silver. It's his sons. He's weeping because of the crisis he finds in his own home and his own family. And it's costing him everything. But it's not going to determine his decisions. So as he weeps, he says, that I'm not going to let the weeping turn off my logic, my principles. Be careful. Be careful, ladies. If you're not careful when you're weeping, those tears will turn off your logic. That sorrow will shut down your train of thought. That broken heart will keep you from living by Bible principle. David was saying, I'll weep, but I'll still do that which is right in the midst of this crisis. And here's what he does. Verse 31, one told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, Oh Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. Go with me to Psalms 3. Go with me to Psalms 3, verse 1. Look at the little notation there. At the beginning of this chapter, a psalm of David. What's it say? When he fled from Absalom, his son, Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. Many there be which say of my soul, there is no help for him in God. Selah. But thou, Lord, art a shield for me, my glory and the lifter of mine head. I cried to the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill. I laid me down and slept. I awakened, for the Lord sustained me. I'll not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for thou hast smitten all mine enemies upon the cheekbone. Thou hast broken the teeth of the ungodly. Salvation belongeth unto the Lord. Thy blessing is upon thy people. You know what David did in the midst of the crisis? I'm going to pray my way through. Can't see the light of day. Can't understand what's going on. David, do you see what David wrote, expressing his soul, his thoughts, and then gratitude, thy blessings is upon thy people, O Lord. Lord, thy blessings is upon thy people, O Lord. Tell me, Lord, that thy blessing is still upon thy people, O Lord. Because you know what David would have prayed if he'd prayed in the flesh? Lord, deliver my son, bring this family back to harmony. And none of that happened. Didn't quite turn out the way he wanted. His son was hung by the hair, and his general, who he told not to touch the young man, had darts stuck deep into the heart, the chest. And with great joy, he came to deliver the news to David. Didn't end up the way he wanted it to. But life doesn't always end up the way we want it to. Because sin complicates life. Not everyone can be saved from their consequences. Not everything turns out like a fairy tale. But here's what can happen. You can go through the crisis. You can go through with God. You can be true to principle. You can have his blessings. You're going to have to say, as I go through this, I'm going to have to be spiritually mature. I'll stay focused. Live by principle. Pray my way through and allow God to have his perfect will and do his work as he sees fit.